This is Cadre, and we're talking healthy conflict.
This is the hard one, and I think it's also the one that people are like, yay, we're going to learn how to do conflict. And then everything's going to be okay.
Doesn't work that way.
Unfortunately. Like, there's not a way for conflict to not be conflict.
In the gaming world, they often talk about conflict as, you know, the gaming mechanic as a tension between two emotions. And they're either two positive emotions or two negative emotions, because there's no conflict if it's love and fear, you're going to choose love. Or if you only have one and there's no conflict, it's just one emotion, you just will take it until you get tired of it. There's nothing that's causing you to go back and forth. There's no like decision or competing ideas of what you want to do. The game that I saw in this discussion as an example is Ticket to Ride, because it is a tension between fear and greed. Greed in that you need to get all the cards because you know you're going to need to get it. But at what point do you stop doing that because you're afraid that that track's going to go away?
So there's actually a really good strategy for that, but I'm not going to tell you. I have some sort of fallback positions, like go-tos, if we're just talking about conflict. Like, there's some great graphs and drawings and articles from some of the earlier works in progress about conflict, and they don't involve play. And we're really trying to talk about how play interacts with these concepts and how we can use play and the ideas of RCT to get better at conflict. Because when we first were like, oh, let's do this, I'm like, oh yeah, we'll do this and we'll do that. But those don't really do play.
What does RCT say about conflict?
It has evolved over the years. There are some just gorgeous sections of Toward a New Psychology of Women, where she talks about healthy conflict. When I would read it, I would imagine like having these conversations where I would get to both share parts of myself that I might have been afraid to share before, but I would know that they would be met with a spaciousness, and I might discover that I was mistaken, or I might shift what I'm thinking because I'm also trying to meet the other person's viewpoint with a spaciousness, knowing that we don't have to win. That was the big piece for me, was, you know, you don't have to win. You can just understand more deeply. Yes, there are some great things that RCT says about conflict. And I think some of the ideas would include, you know, the model me and not me, which we've talked about before, and how our ideas of who we should be or our ideas of who we could never be both get in the way of having authentic conversation and create conflict. I think our strategies of disconnection, those either can accelerate conflict because you're someone who wants to make sure you get ahead of it because that feels safer to you, or they could result in you just completely avoiding conflict. Jane Nelson talks about being nice until you can't stand your kids, and then being mean until you can't stand yourself, like that kind of back and forth. And so when I think of conflict in RCT, I think of one true thing, the idea of finding something that is true, is authentic for you to say, and leaves room for movement in the relationship. I think of saying to a parent with whom I vehemently disagree on how to approach taking care of safety in a school, instead of saying, wow, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard, I could say, we both really care about safety. And that's true. And I don't feel like I'm selling out, and that person doesn't feel like I'm calling them dumb. And I think for that to work, you have to actually get there to where you're really seeing that we both care about safety. Otherwise,
it's not just a platitude.
It's not just a platitude. I don't think part of RCT is that it's a way of meaning making. And if you don't, people come to it wanting steps. Actually, the conflict piece is something that sometimes irks me, because people come to RCT things saying, oh, I'm going to go to this and then I'm going to know how to fix this conflict. It feels to me, if that's how you're doing it, then you're not doing it. And you're not going to get like an authentic reaction, or you're not going to move into a truly mutually growth fostering relationship you're just going to have a pleasant conversation.
That is one of the distinctions that RCT brings to this notion of conflict. It's something that you said before, you know, it's not about winning. And I think a lot of times our predisposition about conflict is somebody's got to win. You know, we think of battles or things, wars, that's the end of those grand conflicts, is that somebody basically surrenders to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what RCT is saying. Conflict has a role in not like creating a dominance of one over the other or satisfying some answer to a question. It's about, are both people or all the parties involved going to move to a new place together?
Mm-hmm.
And so that you can't just do that on your own, or I guess you can say, let's go over there. But usually it's because the place that you are, there's some discomfort in there. There's something about it that isn't right. And conflict, the healthy conflict, is about engaging with that in a way that's going to allow you to both arrive someplace new together.
Mm-hmm.
So the one true thing is the way to stay in conflict, the healthy conflict.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a solution to it, and it's not the disconnection. It's saying, yeah, I'm looking for something to say this is important, but we've got to find something that is true that we can both latch on to, or something that would allow me to have some footing again where I feel like maybe I'd be losing it.
Yes. One of the things you said in there is really important, in that when you're saying the one true thing, you're not saying it with a solution. I think a lot of times when we go into conflict, even if it's nice conflict or whatever, it's persuasive. You already know what you want the person to do. Like, I know that I want my kid to do their homework, and I know that the best practices for homework involve sitting at a clutter-free desk and blah, 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 whatever it is that I already know because I'm an adult and I read the letter that the school sent home or whatever. But that means that I'm not really listening to what is getting in the way of the homework in the first place. And it could have nothing to do with the desk, right? It could have something to do with, I actually don't understand this particular approach to solving equations and I need help with that. Or I'm too hungry, or I'm too tired. You know, like, who knows? But if you've already got the solution, you're not going to hear the need that's underneath it. Seeing conflict as an opportunity to understand more deeply, which is really hard because at the same time, your fight or flight stuff is activated. You want to protect yourself and you want to either run away or, you know, punch someone, but you don't want to be vulnerable. You don't want to be curious. For conflict to be growth fostering, it has to involve curiosity. And so the cards I picked out, I mean, we just talked about the one true thing, but the other two cards that I grabbed are connection and reconnection. I was flipping through one of my favorite books on play as we were getting ready here, which is Playful Parenting by Larry Cohen. And I jotted down just a few of his little things that I love, and they included that kids have to disconnect. They have to fight. They have to argue in order to learn how to repair. Like, if they don't ever have disconnections in their play, they won't ever learn how to repair. Learning how to repair, learning how to have that disconnection and repair has like sort of this, he didn't say trickle up, sure, but like that's how I was imagining it, is like it grows. Then they know that when they were playing house and they couldn't agree on this thing and they kept at it and they got really mad maybe, but then they came back together because they both knew that, you know, their one true thing is that they wanted to play. That in turn could be present when they're in fifth grade and trying to agree on what panorama they're going to make. Play allows us to practice disconnection and reconnection, which is an essential part of RCT.
What I was thinking of is watching people go off to college. Like, inevitably with everybody that I've known, including myself, there's this moment someplace in those 3 or 4 years where your personality is sort of very different than it was. And I always likened it to that exercise where you know, lean against the door and then step away from it and your arm shoots up in the air. Is that there's
I love that.
The things that kept you on a particular order, your understanding of the world or yourself or the people around you that were guiding or controlling, aren't there. And you've got a new set of people and a new set of rules, and you sort of have to figure things out. And it seems like part of that experience is sort of going too far and then pulling things back and finding yourself in that. And I think of Bev Boss, and at some point, you know, the kid will say, well, 5 rolls of toilet paper is where that's
enough. I'm done. Yeah.
And they have that experience. They know what it's like to go through 5 rolls of toilet paper and, you know, make a huge mess of things. It's an experience they have. The limits don't do this. It's you show me what's too much.
Those moments in emerging adulthood where you've had this framework that you've grown up in. And people who reflect certain things back to you, you've got these relationships that have taught you X, Y, Z, and now you're either without those relationships or with your relationships that are teaching you A, B, C, and you may do too much of a variety of things as you're experimenting with that. And through that, you learn the kind of clarity that helps with conflict is the knowing what your worries, what your concerns, what your desires and values are, even as they change, because we are always changing and being influenced by others. But if you have an understanding of the wall that I lean on is that my friendships are valuable, like really valuable. Even if I'm in a whole new situation and I'm trying to figure out what to do, I know that my value is connection and that kind of love. I can return to that going into the conflict. And so if my value is I want my child to develop curiosity, then it can help me let go of what I think the solution is, because I can say, I don't know. The knowing what and being able to name what you value and then making room for a connection with what the other person is valuing too. If I value safety and this other person values safety, we could still be having this huge argument about how you teach kids to cross the street, because we're not really hearing and exploring what the value of safety looks like for each other in a way that helps us co-create a way through this.
Where is the play in that? What you're describing is like the value of the conflict and some of the attributes in there. The curiosity is one of them.
It's so easy to get into just the conflict instead of the play.
You sort of need to have the right ingredients or a way to allow yourself to have that curiosity. If you are in that flight or fight mode, you aren't going to be in a place that is...
We hear about that, like... people who are just sort of angry the whole time they're playing unless they win.
Yeah.
To me, that sounds just miserable. And I think it's why that one little meme that went around after the first COVID lockdown, when there was the professor asking people if they had all defeated Tom Nook, because that's not the point, like, of Animal Crossing. It's there, you don't really defeat things. I'm curious about how to continue to engage in play when you're wanting to play. Like, so you come into a situation wanting to play and you find yourself not feeling playful, not having fun, and there's conflict. How does that work?
Strategies of disconnection is a really key thing. It's like the counter to one true thing. So if I feel I'm in that situation, if it's building and I don't feel like I have a release for it, or I don't have the energy because it's the end of a long day or a long week, I will gravitate towards disconnection, towards finding something that is just going to tune myself out so I don't have to deal with it. And if I do that, if I avoid the conflict that way, there isn't going to be any of this mutually getting into a different space together. It's me saying this conflict is not going to happen. In my mind and with other people's minds, it's like that's a way of resolving it, is to just avoid the conflict or to come in so forcefully that it shuts the other person down. And therefore, there is no conflict, but you're not in the same place at that point. And they may be doing strategies of disconnection in other ways. It takes lots of forms.
Is there room to say, is this fun?
Maybe that's a companion to the one true thing. Mm-hmm. It's the question you're sort of asking to give yourself a chance to find that thing. Because the answer could be no, and it doesn't necessarily mean that just because you say no, it's not fun, that's the end of the game. There's opportunities to be curious and to find out why it's not working, to change rules around or do something different momentarily and then come back to it. When you ask that question, it allows everybody involved to be part of that answer.
Yeah.
And that answer then can lead to other questions. I don't know whether it initiates conflict, but being able to ask that question allows you to see the conflict.
If you just keep pretending that it's fun, hoping that it'll get fun later, it doesn't give you an opportunity to grow and to deepen your play. And I can think of a time that we were playing a board game with our kiddo. It clearly wasn't fun anymore for the kid. It was confusing. And I think I was more at when you do that thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs to the side, yeah. You were probably like at thumbs up because you wanted to like
try it,
learn this game and try it and get it. And kid was at thumbs down and I was at like thumbs sideways. Like I would keep playing if people wanted to, but I was finding the sort of like emotional management that was required of the moment tiring. And we stopped. And I think that was okay. And I assume that at some point, the same group of people will play that game again. Maybe not. Maybe as different characters, because we also learned that it's complicated. Mm-hmm. I was sort of proud of that afternoon, even though I know it didn't end the way probably any of us wanted it to. We were able to talk about what was happening and then say, hey, let's try something different. In that way, we disconnected and we reconnected. We did that dance of naming what was happening and naming the disconnection, because disconnections always happen because that's just how life is, and valuing each other enough to check in and to connect over what our next steps would be. I have one more thing to say about play, from the therapeutic powers of play. The line was, and I've changed it, so this isn't a direct quote, but they were talking about allowing play to emerge authentically, like not trying to control it. And true play is co-world building. If you're co-creating a world, it has room for everyone. Kids' play doesn't have to be fair, because it probably won't be fair because they're experimenting with fairness and equity and what they want to give and what they don't want to give. Your job as a play facilitator is not to make it fair. It's to address the power imbalances. So you're not necessarily making it fair, but you're pointing out, hey, you are 3 times as big as this other kid. Is there something we should do to make the wrestling a little bit more fun for both of you? I like the look at power with that.
Just to try to summarize a little bit, is we have healthy conflict as something where there's a tension that has surfaced that you're both trying to get to a new space together. In those moments of tension, you could feel yourself pulling away and using your strategies of disconnection to end it or to disengage from it, but that's not going to allow you to move. You have these tools such as the is it fun question and one true thing.
Will it still be fun if you don't win?
Yes, yes. It's another Jonathan Liu thing. Mm-hmm. To find a way, probably within yourself, or to see somebody struggling and help them find a way to be able to ask and answer those questions together. Because if you are embroiled or embracing or experiencing that tension fully, you're not in a situation where you can do that. Mm-hmm. The health of a relationship is, can you reconnect and mm-hmm. come back into it?
Yeah.
The reconnection almost demands that there's going to be a disconnection. It isn't a state where it's just always on and you're always in a good relationship and you're always doing the thing that right. It's going to ebb and flow, and we've got to find ways to come back in.
So then when I think of using play to help with real world conflict, one of the terms that comes up for me is resonance. I'm sure there's some study somewhere that will tell you that laughter and humor does something fabulous to your brain and your nervous system. if you are having the real world conflict, being able to take a break, and it might mean that you're taking a break to play separately. I don't know. But if you can take a break to do something that you know makes you laugh together, you know, I think of my YouTube need to laugh list, that I can snap myself out of a pretty deep funk with that particular playlist. Or sometimes when our geek camp would get like a little bit too, I don't want to say mean, but like they really get into each other and like be, no, I want to be on this one, I want to be on that one. And we would just sort of say, okay, this is clearly not working. The thing that we're doing right now, not working. We're going to do something else. And then playing that funny elephant giraffe game where you like motion that you're an elephant or a giraffe and you pass it around the circle, but just do something to sort of disrupt that, sort of the rigid protections that are popping up, and to break into the resonance a little bit. Another real life example of that is when you're just having such a horrible day and, you know, you're sobbing and suddenly you think of, well, at least it's not. And then it turns out to be something kind of funny that you say and probably inappropriate, but you get to laugh and you usually get that eye contact and that response. You get that nonverbal holding from the other person that helps you start the reconnection and work through the conflict that way.
It's hard to do that in the moment. I mean, if you ask somebody in a bad mood, do they want to play a game? The answer is going to be no, more often than not. So How do you help somebody and yourself into intentionally going into a different space?
Those are some things that we can explore when we do our cadre.
And healthy conflict. On May 5th, we will be back to hybrid. So we'll be here at the BCC and mm-hmm. we will be online with Zoom.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too.
This episode of Cadre is a production of the Bloomington Center for Connection, an organization using relational cultural theory to promote social change through connection. This conversation between Kevin McKees and Amy McKees, LCSW, took place on April 16th, 2024 in Bloomington, Indiana, and was edited for this podcast by Kevin McKees. Theme music lovingly sampled from Positive Thinking and Serpentine by Vlad Glushenko. Follow Bloomington Center for Connection on Facebook and other social media platforms.